The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Food and wine culture in Nova Scotia. And this summer, our wineries experienced high visitation through the added experiences like the Wolfville Magic Winery Bus. Mr. Speaker, none of these examples of value-added investment experiences existed 5 years ago. This is how Nova Scotia will foster a new generation of opportunities for our families. Thank you.
We have 30 seconds. If I talk really slow, I could say members' statements time has expired. We'll now prepare for oral questions by members put to ministers. I'll say that again. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Deputy Premier. Mr. Speaker, the government's complete flip-flop on banning flavored tobacco has angered just about everybody. Here are the groups that were supportive of a ban on flavored tobacco: many community health boards, Doctors Nova Scotia, Smoke-Free Nova Scotia, the Canadian Cancer Society, among many others. Mr. Speaker, here are the two that spoke against banning flavored tobacco: Rothman, Benson & Hedges, and Imperial Tobacco. Well, Mr. Speaker, everyone is wondering what happened. What happened? Why did the government ignore all that good advice and go with these two instead? So I'd like to ask the Deputy Premier to explain to this House, why did the government drop its obviously good ban on flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to say a few words about this in answer to the question. I think the first and most important thing to know is that this bill will be the most progressive bill on e-cigarettes and treating it as tobacco in the country. Yes, it will. Mr. Speaker, I know that is true. It will mean that no longer will e-cigarettes be treated just as a commodity. They'll be treated like tobacco. They'll be kept out of the hands of young people. Normalization of their smoking will no longer be the case. So, Mr. Speaker, that in itself is every reason to celebrate the passage of this bill.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well,
kids can smoke now. Yeah, that's good.
Mr. Speaker.
I think you're just now unspoken to Nova Scotia.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to invite the Deputy Premier to tell that to the 3,600 teenage Nova Scotians that are going to start smoking in the next 12 months, beginning with flavored tobacco. Far from being progressive, they have gutted this bill and they've made it a joke, Mr. Speaker. It is a shadow of what it was just 2 days ago, and 3,600 young Nova Scotians are going to now have access to flavored tobacco and begin smoking that wouldn't otherwise. That is nothing to be proud of, Mr. Speaker. It is shameful, and they've made a mess of it. And so I'll ask the Deputy Premier, how can she explain how this government managed to bungle something so important as protecting young Nova Scotians from flavored smoking?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as I said, this legislation is strong legislation and it's the right legislation for today. And I think there's no better reason than to look at what our public health officer, Dr. Strang, said yesterday. He said very strongly, he said that it will be a better bill later when we strengthen it later after consultation. And Mr. Speaker, it's very interesting that this government is criticized when we don't consult and now criticized when we do. That's something.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like the Deputy Premier to show me where one person on this side of the House said, go and ask Rothman, Benson and Hedges what they think, or go and ask Imperial Tobacco. No one ever said to consult them, Mr. Speaker, but that's what they've done. And do you know what they think, Mr. Speaker? Do you know what their words are? I'll quote what they think, Mr. Speaker. Here's a quote from Philip Morris. The ability to attract new smokers and develop them into a young adult franchise is key to our brand development. That's who the government has sided with today, and I will table that quote for the Deputy Premier. So they may be proud of what they have done, but there are 3,600 teenagers counting on them to get it right. So I will ask the Deputy Premier, will they do the right thing and put that ban in place while this House is still sitting in this session?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, for the benefit of the many people who were not at law amendments, perhaps we should be reminded that the members of the Conservative Party asked time and again about consultation on this bill, and we have allowed time for consultation. There will now be that. Mr. Speaker, our government listened, and we're going
order,
to take
please.
The time.
Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, is to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, there's no disputing the fact that flavoured tobacco, like all tobacco, causes harm. Dr. Strang, the province's chief medical officer, supports a ban on flavoured tobacco, and yesterday I was very surprised when I learned that Dr. Strang had not been consulted by the minister about his plan to retreat from a ban on flavoured tobacco. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, is this. Why did the minister not consult the chief public health officer for this province about his decision to continue allowing the sale of flavoured tobacco in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what the honourable member opposite is not conveying to the House and to the public of Nova Scotia is that there was going to be nothing happening until proclamation on May the 31st. And by then, the work that Dr. Strang has put in to tobacco cessation and reduction in our province will be part of a strengthened piece of legislation.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
This just gets more and more bizarre, Mr. Speaker. The answers. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia's most recent tobacco control strategy, which was released in 2011, was developed with the involvement of many, many stakeholders across the province. The strategy recommends, and I quote, that governments support new public health tobacco control measures to prevent tobacco manufacturers from being able to attract new users and retain existing smokers. And I'll table that strategy, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the minister, why is he walking away from the work of over 40 organizations in this province who are concerned about the need to reduce disease and death related to tobacco use?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what that former minister and our government did was walk away and do nothing since 2011.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
You know the federal government tried to do it. They didn't do it. It's not true, Diana.
Well, Mr. Speaker, yesterday the minister wasn't able to explain his position on allowing the sale for flavoured tobacco First, he said he needed time to consult. Then he said the federal government would be working on it. Last week, he said the federal government wouldn't be able to bring in strong enough measures. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. So I want to ask the minister why he just can't resolve to ban flavored tobacco and undermine the tobacco industry, not the health promotion advocates of this province.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the member opposite and all the House is that by May 31st, irregardless of what the federal government does, we will have the strongest legislation around flavored tobacco in the country.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Last week I asked the Minister about Quebec cabbage farmers flooding our problems with cabbage and selling it below the cost of production. This practice is forcing Nova Scotia farmers out of the cabbage business. The minister told the House that he's doing everything he possibly could to help Nova Scotia cabbage farmers. Would the minister please outline what he has done to help Nova Scotia cabbage growers?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. And indeed, we are going to be working with the industry to resolve this problem, hopefully in the long term. Oftentimes, this is a case of cost and cost control in a facility, local facility, and indeed, most of the farming industry doesn't have that tool in place, and we're going to work towards that in the future.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the Minister for that question. Mr. Speaker, a past president of the Nova Scotia Federation of Agriculture, Richard Melvin, has suggested help to cabbage growers. Among his ideas is forming a working group to document the situation and identify solutions. Another is to have departmental staff document the enriched agricultural programming that exists in Quebec and allows such lower prices to occur for cabbage and other horticultural groups. Will the minister commit today to consulting with Richard Melvin and Horticulture Nova Scotia and exploring this suggestion?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
We are always very interested in getting suggestions from industry, and indeed we will consult with them, as we will consult with many other people as we move forward to try to make Nova Scotia's farms more profitable and more competitive in any market.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is through you to the Minister of Health. The Minister of Health told us yesterday in this House that he got cold feet about banning the flavored tobacco, because I quote, Mr. Speaker, we heard a lot at Law Amendments Committee that asked us to take a look at some aspects of the bill, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. I was at Law Amendments, Mr. Speaker, and the issue people raised were about e-cigarettes, not flavored tobacco. The minister even told the media on Tuesday that he anticipated any changes to the bill would only involve amendments to e-juice, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that. So my question to the Minister of Health, through you, which of the two big tobacco reps at Law Amendments Committee convinced him to reverse his decision on flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, pretty disingenuous for the former minister under his watch not to have moved the bar anywhere during his time in office. But that being said, Mr. Speaker, I think most of the members of the House know where I stand in terms of big tobacco. I as minister was able to sign off on a lawsuit that down the road, whether it's 6, 7, or 8 years, I will take great joy in seeing them pay out millions to our province for the harm that they have done. And in just a few short months, we will show big tobacco that there's no place for flavored tobacco in the youth hands of our province.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Pathetic over there.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if the minister, he's just wrong, Mr. Speaker. If the minister hadn't fired the Deputy Minister of Health, he would have been educated on the work the previous government was doing around this file with the federal government. But the first thing he did was fire him, Mr. Speaker. So he's wrong, Mr. Speaker, and he's wrong on this bill. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, when did he tell his colleagues, Mr. Speaker, and key stakeholders like the Canadian Cancer Society about his change of heart on flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Without question, so far in my time in office as the minister, I've had the opportunity to speak about changing to a culture of wellness in this province, and I'm on course to make sure that, unlike the previous government, we will take action. We will keep flavored tobacco out of the hands of Nova Scotians. The bill has a few flaws. We'll correct those with consultation, and we will have strong legislation to protect the next generation of youth of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Economic Rural Development and Tourism. The tourism industry supports over 24,000 jobs across the province. It is a $2 billion industry. Sadly, we have learned that four visitor information centres, including Pictou, Port Hastings, Digby and Yarmouth, have closed earlier than expected, actually up to 6 weeks earlier. Can the Minister please provide the reasoning for these early closures and the dollar amount saved by doing so?
The Honourable Minister of Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member for the question. As I'm sure all members of the House will know, that most of our travellers that are coming to our province now and people who travel throughout the world are using new technology when it comes to travelling, and fewer are relying upon visitor information centres as part of their travelling experience. We looked at the numbers and looked at the amount of visitation to our visitor information centres in the period in question that the member has raised. It was found that there's a significant drop, and as we work as a government in identifying savings wherever we can, this was one of the options, was that to end the season a bit earlier, which is similar to what we did with the Nova Star Ferry as well, in light of some of the numbers. I can get the specific amount of savings to the member.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Nova Scotia Tourism Agency's mandate for 2014 and 15 outlines a strategy to attract more visitors to our province. With the early closures of four visitor information centres that I understand were actually up in visitors, and the unfortunate Yarmouth ferry service ending 3 weeks earlier than scheduled, would the minister agree that possibly the strategy under this Liberal government to attract more visitors is simply not working?
The Honourable Minister of Tourism.
I would say just the opposite, Mr. Speaker. In fact, I would encourage the Honourable Member to go visit down the South Shore and through Yarmouth and speak with operators there and see exactly what the numbers are. Speaker, it has been a dramatic turnaround to visitation in our province. The numbers from the New England states are higher than we have seen in many years, which is proof that the investments that we have made in tourism promotion are working. The success that we have seen with the Nova Star in restoring a service that was cut by the previous government is working. We're all Nova Scotians are telling us that they want to see that service continued. I would ask the Honourable Member to maybe talk to her leader and the member for Argyle-Barrington about asking them to support our efforts to maintain that service.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health has defended his amalgamation of district health authorities by assuring Nova Scotians that local voices will still be heard. He said that community health boards, and I quote, know what their communities need. And Mr. Speaker, he said that their role would be strengthened to improve community input and local outcomes. Mr. Speaker, I'll table those quotes. So my question, Mr. Speaker, through you to the minister, is he still of the opinion that community health boards speak on behalf of local communities?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I believe that the new legislation that we have brought in through Bill 1 makes sure that the 37 community health boards across Nova Scotia continue the great work, the grassroots work with health promotion, disease prevention, but also gives them the opportunity to engage in public consultation. That was not part of what the previous community health boards did, and then pass on to the provincial board what a need or a concern of the community may be.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, community health boards, many of them, came to the Law Amendments Committee this week. And one of the community health boards that came actually is from the minister's backyard, the Kingston Greenwood Community Health Board. And the chair of that board, in her written submission, talked about the fact that she had brought concerns to the minister in May that we needed more protections with respect to flavored tobacco. And she said, and I quote, "Smoke is smoke and tobacco is tobacco. There's no disguising it. It harms individuals and can cause death." Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is this. If he believes that community health boards play such an important role in our health care system, why is he ignoring their advice now?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Member is certainly playing politics here today. What I need to convey to her is that the message of the Community Health Board on this issue has had a long impact on this House, will continue to have an impact on this minister, and she'll be able to delight by the end of May, as the current bill indicates, will be proclaimed, and we will have additional legislation that will give us the ability to close the loopholes around flavored tobacco in our province.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question could be for any one of the ministers. I put them all in a hat, and the Minister of Energy won. Anyway, a number of projects that are in question in my constituency have communications as the major block. The projects may be good, and I feel the Alton Gas project is a good one, but information has not been forthcoming to the community as to what will happen to the water, what will happen to the fish, what will happen to the, you know, to the property values and so on. My question is, should the government take the lead in making sure that proper consultation is given to the community?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. I think it's a very important question, in fact. I agree with him that the government has a role in getting that information out. It's unfortunate that when the original approvals were given in 2007, that there was obviously some consultation at the time, but that consultation and updates didn't continue regularly in the community. I agree that that's a problem. I am participating with AltaGas and the First Nations on Monday in discussions to begin the Mi'kmaq consultation, and we will be updating the community on those projects as we move forward.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I really appreciate that answer, because many times the communities only hear one side and they see the information as being biased. So, again, I'm extremely happy that the Cabinet will consider meeting with the communities and setting out the proper information. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, a family in Colchester County says that they feel like they're living in limbo due to the VON freeze on taking new clients or reinstating services for previous clients who've been hospitalized. Ethel Turner's mother was hospitalized on October the 11th, and although she's been ready to be discharged for 2 weeks, she's still taking up a needed hospital bed because continuing care is no longer able to schedule her home care visits. She's been advised by the care coordinator that this freeze on accepting new home care patients is expected to last 2 or 3 months. So my question for the minister is, how long will Ethel Turner's mother have to take up a hospital bed before she can just go home?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And that is a great question that the member opposite has brought forward. Even with putting an additional $18 million into home care this year, we know that we're seeing that first major wave of the baby boom generation, as 34 Nova Scotians become seniors every day, and meeting the capacity to provide enough home care workers in some cases and get everything scheduled is part of the work of the continuing care strategy. We're moving, of course, to what will be a competitive model to provide home care, which we think will bring better results.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that response. Mr. Speaker, our seniors have worked their whole lives to build this province, and they deserve our respect and our care. Ethel Turner and her family just want her mother to be able to go home instead of being moved from hospital bed to hospital bed, depending on what's available. So through you, Mr. Speaker, when will the Colchester County VON's freeze on taking new clients be lifted so that Ethel Turner's mother can return home safely?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know that the department, again, continues to monitor and work. And we do have three pressure points in the province at the moment. We have six of the current districts that are handling the requirements very well. But when it comes to sometimes Metro, not to, in a continuous manner, the Annapolis Valley and Pictou are three areas that in Truro, yes, that district now, the larger district of Pictou, Cumberland, Colchester, that area. That area is under more stress. And what we're working to do is to make sure that the beds in nursing homes turn over quicker and that we get the scheduling for home care in a more timely fashion.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Center.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have spoken and are demanding a better future for every student. Numerous individuals who responded to the Minister's questions prior to the task force report being released were clearly dissatisfied with the current system, saying it was simply not acceptable. Mr. Speaker, the inclusive education model is one area that I believe should be given immediate attention. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Education, will the Minister make theme 4 of the report ensure that inclusion is working for everyone? Is one of her first priorities allowing the appropriate supports to be available to educators for timely access to assessments and special programs for services?
Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. As the member would know, and as I've stated here, the report that I received was really the voice of 19,000 Nova Scotians who told us what they wanted us to consider, what they saw as our strengths in our system and as our weaknesses. And the discussions that we are having with the Partners Advisory Group will add some information and some suggestions and ideas to that. I've stated very clearly the action plan that will be put together based on what we've heard will be available in January of 2015, and I fully expect, and I will share with all members here, that how we provide for through the inclusion policy and the model that we use may well be a part of that plan.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, educators working with younger children are engaged with increasingly complex environments, including policy demands. Educators are also dealing with culturally diverse groups of children, changing measures of new technology, and public accountability.
My question for the minister, will the minister's action plan provide the necessary structures that are needed to support early learning educators through professional development opportunities?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would like to remind all members of the House that whenever any changes are made in what we deliver and how we deliver, it's absolutely critical that the teachers who are delivering the new changes, the new curriculum, have the professional development, have the in-servicing, and really are part of the decision and part of the model, so that when we move forward, as I've said, we know that the teachers will be the ones who will implement the plan.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ethel Turner, in her own words, says, "I just want to take my mom home safely." And I have to wonder, Mr. Speaker, how many other families in Nova Scotia are currently in Ethel Turner's situation, with loved ones waiting for the day when they can return home with the help of continuing care. The family has been advised, Mr. Speaker, that dozens of other seniors in Colchester Regional Hospital are waiting for that home care also to hopefully be discharged from the hospital. Can the Minister of Health tell the House today how many people are in hospital and are on wait lists for home care?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know that the number who are seniors in our hospitals, there is a group, of course, that are waiting for nursing home, and then there is a group, of course, waiting for to go home to be able to get the special care that our home care agencies provide. And I don't have that breakdown of how many are nursing home bound or how many will be going home, but I can get that for the member opposite.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that information. The government has now passed three pieces of legislation that take away the hard-earned rights of healthcare workers, including Bill 30, which declared, Mr. Speaker, home care workers to be an essential service. So how can the Minister of Health declare home care workers as essential services without providing the proper funding for Nova Scotians to receive home care in the first place?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The demand is very, very considerable. Even with adding $18 million additionally, we're getting up to a couple of hundred million dollars now towards home care. What I can assure the member opposite is that, you know, with the efficiencies that we will gain through developing the one district for the province, we'll be able to reallocate monies towards frontline and in some cases, home care for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Deputy Premier. It turns out, Mr. Speaker, that our power rates are not going to be going down after all. In fact, they're going to go up with interest. Mr. Speaker, in a filing to the URB earlier this week, Nova Scotia Power indicates they want to charge Nova Scotians $24 million in interest on top of their fuel bill, Mr. Speaker. What's shocking is that the Liberal government apparently agrees with this. Mr. Speaker, it's a far cry from what Nova Scotians were promised. I'd like to ask the Deputy Premier, why is the government supporting Nova Scotia's plan to charge Nova Scotians $24 million in interest on top of their fuel bill?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Minister of Energy to answer that question.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the member had actually read all of the IRs and not just cherry-picked one, he would have seen that there is actually no stakeholder before the board that is suggesting picking up all of the fuel in 1 year, nor was that ever the intent in the rate stabilization program approved by the previous government, and this is an outcome of that. And moreover, the fact is that we believe, and this has already been proven this year, that the fuel amounts can come down, and with announcements coming in the coming months from this government, the fuel amounts will come down further, and we don't believe it's necessary to go and pick the pockets of ratepayers, unlike the other two parties who apparently want to go to them for money.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you a document that many Nova Scotians read, and that is the Liberal Party platform. They read the platform. And nowhere in there did it say, by the way, Liberals believe that Nova Scotia Power should be allowed to charge ratepayers $24 million in interest on top of the power bill that they already have to pay. Perhaps it's in the fine print, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps there's some magic asterisk that we all missed, but that bill is now coming home to roost. And unlike the NDP, this time under the Liberals, we have to pay more plus interest. So I'll ask the Deputy Premier, why not just be upfront with Nova Scotians and tell them the fact that someday they're going to have to pay more plus interest as Nova Scotia Power wants and that government supports?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, the leader of the official opposition should know better. He campaigned on being a chartered accountant, so he should be able to read financial statements. The fact of the matter is that ratepayers on the other side of the ledger are not only making interest from Nova Scotia Power, but they are also actually making a weighted average cost of capital, which more than offsets that amount of interest. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, we'll just see, Mr. Speaker, about that. Apparently, the answer from the government on power is no, we're not going to try and give consumers a break. So let's try and give consumers a break another way. I have another question for the Deputy Premier, this time about the tolls on the Halifax-Dartmouth bridges. The Premier committed the government to looking into it the other day. We now know that the toll users are going to pay $200 million for upgrades that are only going to cost $165. There's $35 million there, Mr. Speaker. Will the Deputy Premier commit the government to making sure that the commuters that pay those tolls get a break?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to speak to this issue. The bridges are able to borrow up to $200 million through the government of Nova Scotia, which will save them considerable money. And that doesn't mean the project would be $200 million. It gives them the capacity. The figure that the member opposite, or the leader of the opposition, is using was really quite speculative early on, $160 million that it might cost. That figure is now getting more fine-tuned. It's not the final figure.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, there is potentially good news in that answer, because the $200 million didn't include any further savings from having the government of Nova Scotia stand behind that loan, which may mean that the savings are even greater. So, fair enough, there may be savings down the road when the government gets around to finalizing them. There is an opportunity. Here is a choice for the government. Keep that money that they don't need or return it to commuters. So I'll ask the Deputy Premier, which is it? Will commuters get their money back when the time comes or not?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition is so off base on this. We've made available that amount of money should they need it. They will only borrow the amount of money that they require for this project, which I should point out is the largest project. It's one of the ones that's going to have a big positive impact on our economy as well. It's the biggest project that the harbour's bridges have undertaken since the building of the McKay Bridge.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One second. Are we ready? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, we were very pleased to support announcements last week around CB Rail and its future. But in the last few hours, we've been finding out that the deal was too rich for this government. So, Mr. Speaker, why didn't the Minister of Economic Development tell the assembled people last week that he was not going to support financially the Cape Breton Railway?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it's been a pleasure working with my good friend and Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal on this file, and I would ask him to provide more details to the Honourable Member's question.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, to my friend and colleague for passing me that question. Look, Mr. Speaker, in earnest, to the member opposite, it is an important question. It's one that's been lively and important for the people of Nova Scotia. The reality is that Genesee Wyoming has committed to abandoning this rail line. They want to remove the tracks. They want to use them elsewhere, Mr. Speaker. The member knows very, very well about the mechanism we put in place by way of legislation. The offer that they put on the table included that the people of Nova Scotia, the taxpayers, covered all liabilities, all operational costs, all capital costs, in addition to the opportunity lost from moving our rail somewhere else. So, Mr. Speaker, it would be more than double what we have on the table in terms of the current subsidy, not to mention the massive liabilities that could be hundreds of millions of dollars. That's a poor deal for the people of Nova Scotia. We said no. We'll keep working on that subsidy. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and that's why we negotiate, Mr. Speaker. They may put things on the table, but you negotiate, Mr. Speaker. You know, we've seen multiple job losses in Cape Breton in the last few weeks, whether it's 130 jobs at the call center, the grocery store, the co-op closing, Mr. Speaker, tongue-in-cheek, but it's serious, Tim Hortons closing, Mr. Speaker. These are all jobs, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate your wind-up. So what I want to talk to you, we agree with the investment in Southwest Nova. Why won't the Minister of ERDT invest in Cape Breton, or is it a matter of the last person off of Cape Breton Island, turn the lights out?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, after the last wonderful answer, I'm going to refer that again to my good friend, the Minister of Transportation, Infrastructure
Renewal. Minister of Transportation.
Such a festive mood here, Mr. Speaker. I'm glad we're all getting along. Look, the reality is on this file, Mr. Speaker, we've identified a very specific process for how we would proceed with the Cape Breton rail line. We've taken away discontinuance from an abandonment. We put the power to decide on abandonment back to the people of Nova Scotia vis-a-vis their government, Mr. Speaker. It's a good decision that we made. We don't want any increased erosion in economic prosperity for Cape Breton. We want the opposite. This procedure, this bill that the member is supporting, will give us time to look at all those options. If there's a viable operation, a business plan for this rail, we'll support that operation. But, Mr. Speaker, like the Premier says, like our government says, we need a good, solid private sector investor to make this happen. That's what we're working towards. And by October 15, we'll have those answers, Mr. Speaker. But we're standing up for the assets and for the people of Nova Scotia who've invested in the Cape Breton rail line. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is also for the Minister of ERDT. Mr. Speaker, in October, the government provided the Nova Star Ferry with an additional $5 million just prior to the completion of the cruise line's first season. And, Mr. Speaker, we know that there may be a long road in front of us for this ferry, to mix metaphors, I guess, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development is this. Of the $5 million provided to Novastar in October, how much was used by the operator to pay for the lease of the ship?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I'm happy that the Leader of the NDP has asked a question about the Novastar, because I was just recently reviewing the timeline that took place by the previous government in choosing who would be the operator for this new ferry. Keep in mind, this is the government that cancelled the ferry, and there may even be some people here in the House today that can speak to this, Mr. Speaker, outside of this floor. But, Mr. Speaker, what we've now learned is that when the decision was made to go with STM as the operator, staff were given 3 weeks to negotiate a $21 million offer before it was approved by the previous government. Sir Speaker, maybe during those 3 weeks, the Honourable Leader of the NDP could tell us exactly what provisions had they made in case there wasn't any winter work for that vessel.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this government talks about how transparent they want to be and how accountable they want to be with respect to investing public money in private enterprise. But, Mr. Speaker, the minister had an opportunity to answer a very simple question. and he blew it, Mr. Speaker. He didn't use his time well. So my question here is this. The Minister of Economic Development perhaps would tell us what is the monthly cost of the Novastar lease with STM Marine.
The Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
Well, Mr. Speaker, for someone who sat at the cabinet table, who within 3 weeks of choosing an operator decided on a $21 million seven-year deal, which had no hopes of ever being able to be achieved, which was clearly a political decision, knowing that it's that government that negotiated that, and now for her to stand in the House and ask me for details of an agreement that she negotiated, I would suggest that when it comes to transparency, she may want to ask herself, who's not being transparent here by asking questions of a deal they negotiated?
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture. Mr. Speaker, the draft of the Nova Scotia Independent Agriculture Regulatory Review Panel was released July 4th for public review and free feedback. At the time, the Department press release indicated, and I quote, the panel's final report will be submitted to the Fisheries and Aquaculture Minister Keith Colwell in September, and I will table that. We are now into November, and this report has not been submitted to the minister, and as of October 28th, the review panel's website gave no indication of when it would be submitted, only that it's being formatted, and I tabled that too just now. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the minister is, can the minister inform the House when he expects to receive this already delayed report?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, we don't control when the report will come to us. It's a totally independent board that's studying this issue. We're very anxious to get the final report from them. The latest estimate we've had from them is another 2 weeks. Hopefully that will be met, but again, it's a totally independent board. We're at their mercy for when they're going to supply it to us. We want to make sure they do a complete, thorough job before they do provide it to us.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
And, Mr. Speaker, through you, I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, it is the expectation that the recommendations of this report will inform the restructuring of aquaculture regulations in the province. Any impending changes are of great importance to aquaculture farmers as they try to produce business plans and plan for the future. The industry wants to know that the Department of Fisheries and Aquaculture will be able to provide a clear timeline of when the new regulatory framework will be in place and enforced. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is this. Will he commit to a concrete timeline for the introduction of the new regulatory framework when he releases the report of the regulatory review panel?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much. It's a very important question. And indeed, we'll be working with the report once we receive the final report. We're already taking steps from the interim report we received to move this file forward. There's a great deal of economic opportunity potential in aquaculture, but it has to be done properly. It has to be done with consultation in the communities, and we have to do it properly with enforcement. We are looking at all those issues now, and as soon as we get the final report, we will be reviewing that in detail and see how we can implement this as quickly as possible. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture. Mr. Speaker, last month, 5 of 8 applications for new oyster farming leases in Little Harbour, Merrimack area were withdrawn by the applicants. At the request of the Department and working in good faith, these applicants withdrew their requests. Now these applicants, they want to play by the rules, Mr. Speaker, but they also deserve to see leadership and transparency from the Department of Fisheries. So my question today for the Minister is, has he met with these applicants and communicated to them how long these applications will be on hold?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Well, thank you very much. This, again, is a very important question, and shellfish aquaculture in the province is a significant contributor to our economy. Unfortunately, at the time that those applications were before the public hearing, there wasn't complete information, and indeed the applicants did not properly consult with the community before it started. So before we would consider moving forward on any of these and reviewing these again, they're going to have to do the proper consultation and I believe my staff has already been talking to them and instructing them what they have to do.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we know sometimes in this House we'd like to dwell on what happened yesterday, but these people want to know what's going to happen tomorrow. When can they expect to hear from the department? When can these applications start to go forward? And hopefully we're not going to hear anything about an oyster marketing board that might come in and shut down all these small fishers, because we have tremendous opportunities to expand shellfish farming in this province. And helping local shellfish farmers capitalize on new opportunities will create new employment and benefit rural Nova Scotia. So while applicants have accepted withdrawing their bids for the time being, oysters and other fish are being harvested on an ad hoc basis in an unregulated manner in these areas. So my question today for the minister is, these applicants want to create new opportunities. They want to create, they want to contribute to their communities, but they can't wait forever. So will the minister provide an action plan and timeline to the applicants so they know what to expect and when, and they can be prepared to respond to the department?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, again. Our department, our government, definitely wants to move aquaculture forward in this province on the basis of shellfish. Shellfish have a great opportunity of cleaning up the water, especially oysters in the field, and there's a tremendous market for them. But the applications have to be completed properly. We will work with anyone and everyone that brings an application forward to make sure that it's done. A lot of this has to also go to other regulatory bodies such as the Coast Guard, DFO, and other provincial and federal departments in order to make this work properly. We're working in that regard, and we're very anxious to work with these people and indeed, hopefully, get them in a situation so they can have a proper plan in place with a proper consultation so we can move these forward.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia. The recent Provincial Municipal Fiscal Review recommendation 14 suggested that the 22 villages in Nova Scotia should be abolished. Those villages weren't able to be part of that consultation. Does the minister think it's fair that the group that was omitted from recommendations would be the ones mostly affected by it?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. Time. Time allotted for oral questions by members has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would you please call government bills for third reading?
We'll now call government bills for third reading.
Speaker, would you please call bill number 38, the Pooled Registered Pension Plans Act?
We'll now call bill number 38, the Pooled Registered Pension Plan Act. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I am pleased to rise today on Bill 38. I now move that Bill 38, Pooled Registered Pension Plans Act, be read a third time. So, Mr. Speaker, we've had a little bit of discussion, some spirited discussion on this. I wanted to reiterate